with information on the latest developments in assistive technology and initiatives from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest.
Hello, I'm Barbara Sullivan. In part one of this two-part edition of AbleQuest, I spoke with Sydney-based speech pathologist Margie Logan about traumatic brain injury and the role of the speech pathologist in the recovery process. She explained that their role includes assessing speech problems and neuromuscular difficulties, as well as language, cognitive, and communication impairment. She said they intervene at a very early stage because it is imperative to first assess the patient's ability to communicate in some way. It is a vital part of the treatment that they gain some communication skills, however small, such as the blink of an eye, in order to express their needs and be able to process and respond to instructions. They are then able to teach them how to swallow, a critical first step to recovery. Only when the patient can swallow can they begin to address the speech and language problems. She discussed the various avenues of treatment, and in this program today, she talks more about technical aids and compensation strategies used in the ongoing management plan to encourage independence. What aids and assistive technology do you use? Because on AbleQuest, we're particularly interested in the areas of assistive technology and initiatives that help people function more independently.
Do you know what? One of the most wonderful things that happened, I personally think, in people with traumatic brain injury is the mobile phone.
Really? Tell
me. Fabulous. Particularly for memory. I've got a client now, a young man, who has a severe short-term memory problem and was heavily dependent on other people. Was living back at home with his mother, heavily dependent on her telling him constantly what was going on, what he had to do next. And it was really disabling. And we trained him to use his mobile phone, and he started entering, and he remembered, because we overtrained him, that every time someone would say something, you know, here's an appointment, this is what you've got to do next, particularly for prospective things, things that he had to do tomorrow or the next day or the next 15 minutes even. So he got into the habit of entering it into his calendar and putting reminders. So his phone had beeped an hour before, and he also got, you know, if it was an hour away, an hour and a half before he'd put the reminder in. So he could also organise, because his organisational abilities were quite good, he could determine if he was going to have to go to the personal trainer in Newport when he was in the city. He had to make sure that an hour before that he was on a bus. So an hour before that, he'd say, you've got to get on the bus in an hour,
right,
get up to the other end of town. But really changed his life. He's now living on his own in the city. Really, he is still dependent on the device, but the fact that he actually now independently enters it into the device has actually helped his memory. Even if he gets the reminder, he often already knows that it's going to happen because he's gone through the process of entry.
That's very, very interesting, isn't it? Whether somebody is there organising their lives for them, they just rely on it and know that mother will always have the answer.
Absolutely, yeah. And he didn't want that either.
No.
It's convenient, but I think in terms of esteem, it's really important that people are independent as they can possibly be. And once they've got the tool to do that, it's really nice to see.
So what if people are in a state where they can't function at that level, you know, entering data into a mobile phone or whatever?
Yeah.
What are some of the other tools and assistive technology that you might use?
There's an enormous amount for speech augmentation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, probably more so, and we haven't really gone into it in a lot of detail about social communication skills, but in terms of actual speech production,
yes,
so the physical production of speech, if someone is significantly impacted by their musculature and their speech is hard to understand, fortunately for technology, there are now reasonably inexpensive devices or iPad apps that type and speak. If you're not physically capable of typing, you can put a switch to the program and it'll scan and you just select the letter that you want to pick. And, of course, there's all different scanning options. So to make the process a little quicker, Otherwise, you'd be going letter by letter the whole time. Yeah. Even if your attention was good, that would be tedious.
Yeah.
So there's systems whereby you can go in chunks of the page, select the chunk, then it'll go line by line. And again, there are people who can really only access things, you know, with a movement of their head or an eye blink to access a switch. And I've actually got a girl at the moment who is, she had a brain injury some time ago. She's quite young. She's only 30. And she has a quite violent ATNR, which is asymmetric tonic neck reflex. So she goes into a strong spastic extension when she tries to do something, which is really difficult because she has very little control. So when she attempts to move her hands, one of her arms will fling up in a flexed position and the other one will go into full extension and legs will extend. So even though she understands everything and she's capable of typing and we've tried arm slings and all sorts of things, she actually, at the moment, can type if you steady her hand. So if you can actually hold her hand in a position, and she can actually move her finger to type on a really small alphabet keyboard. She can type things out for you. So she can tell you all sorts of things. And even the mobile phone keyboard, same thing. That's how her sister and her talk to each other all the time. She'll type things on the mobile phone keyboard.
Well, that's amazing considering how small it is.
Yeah, she can't move her finger any wider. But luckily, she's got good vision. because she can. It's a lot harder for her to try and reach a standard keyboard. But she can move her finger just slightly sideways and type on that if it's a sideways keyboard. So if you put the phone on the side, so the keyboard's a little larger.
Right.
She can type quite well on that.
So you've actually talked about some fairly recent innovations in technology, like some of the apps and so on. Is there anything coming down the pipe that you know about that is particularly useful in rehabilitation?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. There probably is, though. There's things coming up all the time, Barbara.
Mm.
You know, I'm week by week discovering something that I think, wow, that's great. That's a new... So it's coming really thick and fast, and the lack of expense that's making it so readily available to people. So
yes,
once upon a time, a device that would enable, for example, someone who can't read or write, and occasionally if your language skills are impaired after a traumatic brain injury, you lose the capacity to read or write. And if you don't have that capacity, then you can't type anything. But you can sometimes identify pictures. If the pictures are sorted in categories, you can actually formulate sentences or at least simple sentences to express your needs and wants and converse using pictures. And some of them are quite detailed. And, you know, they've got feelings and places and food and clothing and medical requirements and all sorts of different categories, family members. And again, either with your finger on a touch screen or with a switch, if you're incapable of moving, you can access those sorts of things. And I've only just recently downloaded something called ProLoquo2Go, which is that sort of program, which once upon a time, a similar type of program would have been a standalone device, and it would have been about $16,000.
Good Lord.
And this app is about $200.
Oh, how fantastic.
So it enables people who might not be wonderfully capable of using that in the first instance to actually have it so they can train on it. So once they've got it and they can train on it and build on that, then they can have a whole communication system that they can use reasonably well, but it's taken them maybe a couple of years of training. You wouldn't have run the risk with $16,000 if it wasn't going to work.
No, and then that can be a platform for developing their reading and writing skills.
Completely, yeah.
No, it is interesting because I guess would not have thought of speech pathology as including a focus on reading and writing skills, but clearly
it does
because of language.
Yeah, language, absolutely, absolutely. And it's really big, and sometimes even pre-morbid communication skills come into it. So sometimes people just, whether it was English as a second language or whether they just were a little dyslexic before, their capacity to write things is not ideal, even without a new impairment.
Right.
Generally speaking, the two, broadly speaking, types of traumatic brain injuries are either the closed head injuries, where you have a fall or a motor vehicle accident mainly, or the penetrating injuries where it's localised, like a bullet in your head or a blunt force trauma,
right,
where you hit in a spot on your head. It's usually the localised injuries that will cause the speech and language problem, and it's usually that the other injuries, the closed head injuries, where there's acceleration, deceleration problems, that will cause this other communication deficits that are high level, and speech problems are really common.
It's a long, long road, isn't it? Particularly with some of the cases that you've talked about. How long typically does therapy last? And is there a typical time limit?
Well, interestingly enough, therapy, whether a speech pathologist is involved or otherwise, should be lifelong, is the truth.
Yeah.
It's chronic. All of the latest information in neuroscience says this is a chronic condition. Once upon a time, there was the belief that there was some period of recovery and then people plateaued, left them alone. That's not the case. And it is imperative that people do something to stimulate the areas of deficit ongoingly, whether they're doing it themselves, whether they're doing it with family, whether they're involved in groups, or they're seeing someone sporadically to give them a program to go on with. That's a challenge of ours as well as speech pathologists, because knowing that, we need to know how best for our clients that we can enable this ongoing process to continue, considering all the variables such as resources and costs and so forth.
Yes, and the continued research into the plasticity of the brain, I'm sure, is reinforcing that need that you said for just lifelong therapy,
yes,
lifelong concentration.
Yes. And yes, I mean, as we all know now, with brain function, even a brain that hasn't had an impairment, stimulation is the key, particularly for someone with a traumatic brain injury. It's really imperative. And it's difficult because people get sick and tired.
Yes.
Of having to put it in. So motivating people becomes a big part of it, allowing them periods of break, rest, so that they can then come back and say, like we do for work.
Yeah.
Have a period of rest and come back remotivated and do your best for this period of time.
And having a passionate speech pathologist to work with.
That helps too.
Margie, thank you so much. It's been extremely interesting.
And that is the conclusion of Barbara Sullivan's two-part conversation with Margie Logan, a speech pathologist who has extensive experience in treating people who have suffered traumatic brain injury. You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. From Barbara Sullivan and Marnie Roper, thank you for listening and goodbye till next programme.